for the people out there in Radio Landia, you know, they don't get to see your face, right? They just hear the, they just hear your voice, but I get to see your face. It's a beautiful face. So I'm happy to see you, brother.
Homie, it's so good to see you too, man. Yeah, and Bill.
Yeah, for real. It's been too long. You and I were working together back in the, I don't know, early 2000s or something. There in Boulder, we were doing a radio youth program with high school students in Boulder. And, you know, I'd go in and do poetry classes with them and teach them to write their stories. And then you would like help them record them and produce beats and music. It was just a fantastic collaboration.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was one of the best moments ever, man. Really working with you and Dana, you know, Dana Walker, you know, Dr. Walker from Northern Colorado University. She had a lot of background. And so when I met her, I was just starting to do like youth media stuff. And I was teaching one class at another school after school with just Latino kids. And then somehow we connected. I don't know how, but she mentioned, hey, I'm going to be doing a literacy class, you know, working inside of a literacy class with Tim Hernandez, this poet. Yeah. And she broke down this format of like the three of us working together. And I thought it would just be, I would learn so much, you know what I mean? So that was early in my teaching career, man, because I ended up teaching for over 10 years, doing like youth radio. Eventually, I worked for the community radio station here in Boulder, KGNU. 88.5. I thought it was really funny that your station is also 88.5. I was like, that's dope. But aquí, mano, I worked with KGNU for like 5 years doing youth radio at New Vista High School. I ended up working at tons of schools. But working with you, carnal, was so useful, man, to see how you worked with the youth on the content. And I would come in later, be like, all right, let's do the techno jockeying, you know, recording, capturing, uploading, you know, downloading, chop, export, you know.
And then they would get the youth, the teenagers, the high schoolers would get to see their finished product and listen to it on a CD or at the time CDs, right? Or MP3.
See, it was like, where do you, streaming was just starting. Yeah, everybody was like YouTube.
Yeah. we even did an exhibit there also at some point. We had like an exhibit. It was beautiful collaboration and all thanks to Professor Dana Walker for that, you know, who's a good friend. I consider her still very much a good friend, you know, and she just did so much good work in the community there.
I agree, man. Absolutely. No, it was super dope. I know, you know, I saw a lot of those youth late, you know, I still see them around town, actually. Wow. I still see former students of mine in different places around town. And, they always appreciated those kinds of classes from that we, you know, to do education when they don't realize it's being education, you know, where they're so engaged and participating, you know what I mean?
I imagine, too, there was something about, and this is probably why Dana Walker got us involved, is that there's something about having these young Latino youth in Boulder, Colorado, in Boulder County, being able to see themselves reflected in their educators and their teachers, you know, and we were able to do that with them and talk about their stories. And we even went to some of their homes and that kind of thing as well, I remember, you know, just good work there, really good work.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it was so evident when we go into the schools and we start speaking in Spanish and, you know, using coded language, you know, to demonstrate like where we come from and that you know, and relate and connect with the youth. You know what I mean? I saw it everywhere, Carmen, at all the schools here in Boulder. Unfortunately, the lack of representation of Latinos in teaching roles and in leadership roles, you know? So,
And you know, I mean, that's just one aspect of all the work you've been doing for the years, you know, over the years for the community. I consider you a cultural and community warrior. You know, you're holding it down over there in Colorado on the front range, you know, doing a lot of good stuff. And I want to build up towards what your latest endeavors are. You know, we're going to talk about that in a few minutes, but dude, you're a man of so many talents. When I met you, you were in a band, like a Latin fusion reggae salsa band. And are you still doing that?
Music? Yeah. Well, yo, the last show, check this. Our last show, we opened for Ozomatli here in Boulder, like right before the pandemic hit. Like it was February 18th or something like that. Yeah. And that was the last show. It was amazing, man. But you know, we played for like 15 years in Boulder, Denver. And then, you know, we all have jobs and you know, families and other projects that we, you know, wanted to pursue. So we you know, when the show comes, we'll definitely we can definitely pull it together. But we haven't played since the pandemic. And yeah, I've been focused on growing these businesses. Really, that's I used to be the sort of organizer of the band, the manager, really. So I couldn't do that anymore once I decided to launch this last drink, Frescos Naturales, you know?
Naturales, yeah. And we'll talk about that ahorita because I wanted to first ask you because I know that you're also been doing this, like you said, as a single father, también this whole time, you know, kind of working on that as well, which is, you know, that's the home front. We got to hold that down first, you know, first and foremost. And how do you manage to you know, because you're somebody, I mean, listen, if somebody had to ask me, describe Juan Ignacio Stewart, you know, I would easily say somebody who does, he's a DIY kind of dude. He'll get his hands dirty, make it happen. You know, he'll take the ball and run with it. But at the same time, I know that whenever we are those types of personalities and we do that, we take charge of things and make things happen. You know, it's a difficult balance between that and home life. You know, and how has that been for you as a single dad?
Well, Carnal, and I don't know how much you know of you know, my son's the last few years. You know, Joaquin is now 20, and he's in, you know, his second freshman semester at CU Boulder. But at 15, when he was about to go into his sophomore year at Boulder High, he was diagnosed with Ewing sarcoma, which is a type of bone tumor. It's a cancer that is deadly and happens usually with kids, and it's kind of rare. And when that happened, Carnal, like I guess, you know, with Joaquin at, you know, once he was 15, he was the last person I would worry about, sort of, you know what I mean? Like I had I always dreamed of being a father, I think, you know, and I was really close to Joaquin growing up. I felt that by that point, like I had put in everything I could in him, and he was just operating on his own. And when that happened, man, I mean, it that's one of the reasons why I guess is also stopped playing music. I stopped doing a lot of things, you know, stopped training capoeira as well. I just couldn't.
That's right.
I couldn't focus on anything. I needed to be like listo para los putazos, man. You know, you ready for when the fan. You know what I mean, like. And so I needed to cut everything out of my life, so I could be there, you know, for him, you know, and holding it down, not just emotionally, but the house, you know what I mean? And keep operating as a family and keep on doing things. The darkest, hardest moments of my life, chavo, man, o sea, te lo juro, ha sido, you know, that I would love to have a conversation with you, you know, a separate time about that, about all of that, you know, because I've never felt, I don't even know how to describe it, like, so vulnerable or without knowing what, I couldn't do anything, you know what I mean? Like, you know, to help my son, you know, while we were going through, you know, we went through 7 months of chemo, 1 month of daily radiation. We beat that cancer. Then he was cancer free for 10 months and then came back again. This time in a different place where we could do surgery, and it was a lot smaller. La primera vez, the first time it was like the size of a softball. The second time was like very small. So we were able to do surgery, but you know, since then, and of course more chemo, you know, you have to do chemo as well. Brother is like, it's literally like you go through, you know, Dante's inferno and Dante's hell, and then you're out, and they're like, yo, you forgot your keys. You got to go back and get it. And so we did that multiple times, man. And so, yeah, I don't even know how to, sometimes I still have a lot of trauma from it, you know, like,
sure,
you know, being just seeing your son suffer is the hardest thing ever. As a parent, you can't, like, in spending days at the hospital, Denver Children's Hospital, which is a great place, but also very difficult, you know what I mean? And just like you go in, Carnal, and the world, it's like you go into a fishbowl or something, you know, it's like the world, I would try to work and I couldn't work. I could just sit there and hold it down for my boy, man. Like he's made me everything I am, man. Really, you know, like, so for me, being a father is like the biggest role I've ever played in my life, you know?
That's right.
Everything I've done in my life up to now has been connected to that father figure, yeah, and that father role, you know. And even now, like moving to Denver is it's crazy, and living by myself is now it you know, Joaquin has been living by himself for the past year, so you know it's already, pero it's just hard, man, to let go. Let me tell you, man.
I get it, bro. I get it.
I know your kids are right there. Your girl is, what, she's 16 or something?
Well, she's 18 now. Yeah, she's
18. 18. Oh, man, it is the separation.
My son is 14, though. My son's 14, yeah.
Bro, it's like we build these, I don't know, these things come out of our soul, out of our hearts, out of our minds, our being, to, you know, to connect with these other beings since they're babies, you know what I mean? Let's cuidas, you do everything, you give them everything, and then you have to let go. You have to, it is, you know, then they grow into their own being, their own person, and they're not that child that you're so used to, like, taking care of. And carnal, like, I think about calling Joaquin all the time, but I'm like, no, don't, you know, just calm. That's all right.
I hear that.
I don't want to be like my own mother, you know, like, you me acuerdo. I was a young father, you know, so 40, you know what I mean? So, yeah. You know, I talked to my mom. I called her last night, finally, after moving into Denver. I hadn't talked to her for a few days. The conversation with my mom were like an hour. You know, like, and she talks 80% of the time, you know what I mean? And now, and I understand her so much more now because I'm a father, and even going through this detachment right now with my son, that he's going to college and everything, and letting him, you know, be, I understand my mom now so much more.
No, I get it. Yeah. And you know, you're absolutely right. And I think, if you're a parent who's involved in your child's life, you know, to the degree that we are, that you are, and that I am as well, it's, I mean, any parent, I want to say, you know, the moment it's like having a child is like having your heart beat literally outside walking around in the streets. You know, it's so tender and fragile, and you don't want nobody to step on it, you know,
exactly.
and yet it's beyond your control. And so whenever you're in a position where you see your child hurting, even in a small way, and you can't do anything about it, it's painful, you know, much less the bigger challenges, you know, for sure. And you're right, it does. It becomes in many ways your whole purpose, you know, that's your purpose. And for you, I guess my question to you then is, you know, in the meantime, at least for the last 5 years that I know, in the last 5 years that I've been following you and we've been friends, I know you've been still moving forward with certain entrepreneurial projects. Like, you started making this salsa, right?
Yeah.
That was the first thing that I heard from you, was like, okay, last thing I knew is that Juan Ignacio Stewart was playing salsa on stages, performing salsa and reggae, and now he's making salsas. What is going on? How's he doing that?
Yo, you hit on something right in the last comment that I just want to like talk about real quick. And it's the part of like suffering. You know, I didn't know, you know, and our kids suffering, you know, and we know the life is suffering. And you know, when Joaquin was about 14, I started to realize, I was like, yo, this kid's about to go into his own adult life, and like suffering is coming for him, you know, in the way that life provides it, right? Like, you know, loss of anything, you know, friendships, jobs, relationships, just things that are difficult, you know, once we see, you know, we see our kids, you know, leave, you know, and go into the world, we know what the world is like, you know what I mean? One of my biggest, I think, lessons has been suffering, mm-hmm. you know, and hardship, you know what I mean? Those things are some of the things that have motivated me and given me the most, I don't know, almost like ambition or like, belief in myself, you know, and so I want that for my son too, you know what I mean? But
yep.
You know that it's going to be, you have to let them go through that, because that's where they're going to gain strength. You know, that's where they're going to learn. You know, through failure, failure has been the biggest teacher of mine in my life. I failed so many times that I'm comfortable with trying things, you know, and so I want that, you know, for my kiddo as well, you know, but I know it's hard. And,
no, I know. It is.
I guess let's see with the hot sauce. Okay. Yeah. That's a good example. So basically I was doing video production when we met. I was doing freelance video, production, post-production. So I would shoot, I would produce, I would edit. And then I would also teach on the side. But sometimes, you know, there was work for, you know, 3 days, sometimes 3 months. I never wanted to do like really just commercial work. I wanted to work with like people I believed in and things I wanted to do. So, you know, sometimes okay, here's the other thing. I would drive a taxi. I drove taxi from college and after college. And then once I started my, you know, producing content, and eventually I was able to like let it go. But whenever I didn't have money, I would you know, just go get a cab, and this is before Uber and Lyft existed. You know?
Right. Yeah.
So, but literally, yeah, you were broke. It was like, all right, go get a cab, and like an hour later, you're gonna have $100 in your pocket. Yep. And that's how I would take care of my family. You know what I mean? So, but eventually, after doing it so long, you know, and I would drive late night, man. I would drive like 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., 8 a.m., you know?
Yeah.
And I just didn't want to do it anymore after like 5, 6 years. And I was like, I need something different, something that's my own, you know? And my roommate would always say like, yo, you should try selling your sauce at your mom's hot sauce at the farmer's market, Boulder Farmer's Market. I live like 3 blocks away. Yeah. And I would never go because it was too expensive. You know, here in Boulder, I learned to survive. The way to survive in Boulder is that you're either rich or you've got to be poor. So, I had like for 10 years, I had food stamps here in Boulder, you know, and that's really that helped me out a lot. You know, and so I wouldn't go to they wouldn't take food stamps at the farmers market. So now they do, which is dope. But back then they wouldn't. Anyway, one day just like trying to figure out what I can do that's more sustainable than video production, particularly here in Boulder. And looking at the time, Joaquin was like 10. So I was like, yeah, I'm not going anywhere yet. I need to stay here. Like I would have gone to LA or I would have gone to Denver a long time ago if it wasn't for my attachment to being close to my son, you know? So anyway, I thought about what my roommate had said over and over, and then so I went to get the ingredients, and then I made a batch, and then I figured out how much it cost per bottle, and it was going to be like roughly $1 a bottle. So I was like, okay, I could sell it for, you know, $6, you know, 2 for $10 or something. And carnal, I tried it out I tried it out the first year and failed. Completely failed. Like I didn't know that you had to apply to the farmers market for some reason. I think I went one day and asked somebody there, and they were like, "Oh, they give you a spot, you know." So the first day of the farmers market, I just show up with my stuff. I had made a batch, dude. I had made like these little.
You were ready to do it.
Like I didn't have a label yet. I just had these little like twine things that would hold like a little thing with the ingredient, you know. Like artesanal, you know, and I show up and I'm like, yo, where, you know, put me in, coach, you know, and they're like, oh, no, that's not how it works. So that year failed. The next next year I did it again, and this time I had a label, this time I applied, you know, and I got in, and it sold like crazy. Like the money was just too good, you know. It's like, you know, I think I spent $200. And then I had, you know, after the farmer's market, $1,000 in my pocket. I was like, oh my God, this is just it. Run it again, man, you know? Yeah. So
salsa.
Así es como empezó, mano. Así es como empezó. And it was one sauce that first year I would sell out every week. And I was still teaching. You know, I was teaching at 3 schools, you know, so. Dude, I didn't quit my multiple day jobs that year, you know what I mean? And if it wasn't for my partner, I had a girlfriend at the time who I got out of teaching at 4 p.m. and you had to be start to set up at 3:30 p.m. downtown. So there's no way I would have made it that first year to that first farmer's market if it wasn't for this partner of mine that helped me out.
Yeah.
And it took off. And then, eventually, the second year, I was like, dude, you need to make something just as unique as the first one. So I got the idea of bringing a pepper from Guatemala. You know, I didn't know how to do it. So I was lucky to go that year to Guatemala for Semana Santa. And I was like, how do I bring this to it? I was looking at, you know, trade agreements, dude. And eventually I was like, no, man, just put in the suitcase and let's go. And yeah, that's how
yeah,
I did.
Yeah, smuggle it.
The first, well, it's legal, actually. No, you can bring up good. To 50 pounds of spices, no problem, according to the TSA. So that's nice. That's what I did the first, you know, summer. Then at that winter, it was like Joaquin, my son, had a suitcase. I had a suitcase. My girlfriend had a suitcase. My dad, you know, eventually that's not sustainable. It was really dope to go to get Chile. But I eventually, started a company in Guatemala. It's now I export this chile cuanero from. That's grown by Mayan Kikchi communities in Alta Verapaz. It's nice. It's an amazing chile, compadre.
All right, brother. Okay, sounds good. But Juan Ignacio, I want to make a quick leap here. I know you're telling, because we're kind of running short on time, but I want to make a leap between the salsa to now where you're at now, because I know that salsa took off. I know it took off. I remember it just, you know, catching fire.
And it did. Basically, I'll do it short, but basically it took off. It's in supermarkets across Colorado. You know, we every year, you know, the first year, I think we sold maybe 20,000, then we'd sold 50 the next year, then 90, then 180 the next year. Dude, last year we sold 400,000 in hot sauce. You know, it's amazing. But I haven't gotten paid yet. You know what I mean? Like the hot sauce is like, it works. It eventually, I was able to quit all those teaching jobs and just dedicate myself to that. And it paid the bills, right? It paid. It would be a little bit profitable, but not enough to really pay me a lot of money, you know?
Right.
At the same time, it gave me this amazing lifestyle, and I've sent hot sauce, man, to Japan, to all over the world. I mean, it's my mom's hot sauce has gone all over the world. So that's really satisfying. And the most important thing is that it taught me about this industry, about, you know, consumer packaged goods, about how to produce something that's good in what you need to scale it, which is margins.
Yeah.
Okay. And compadre, la idea fue Joaquín de mi hijo right here in the kitchen. Wow. You know, I made him one summer, like, I always wanted Joaquín to grow up with the same smells that I grew up with in the kitchen. Yeah. That was very important. Jamaica, I gave it to him since he was a kid. You know what I mean? Like, he grew up with drinking gallons of it, and one summer, man, he comes back from skateboarding, he's sweating, and I made Jamaica. He just pounds this pint, and he says, "You know what you should bottle, Pops, is this stuff." Y compadre, man, I was like, "Bing, that's like
Jamaica."
La burbuja, man. Sí, bro. Mira, we all drink it. It's bueno, bonito, barato. It's good. It's cheap, and it's delicious, and it's not in the market. And I was like. And I was like, yo, this is going to be so easy to make. Like, this compared to hot sauce is a joke. Like, like you wouldn't even get dirty. Brother, haciendo, like grinding down cilantro, garlic, habaneros, man, it's tough, dude, and bottling hot. Man. So, I started. That's where the idea started, and I knew that there was a space for it. That was 2018. So I started testing at the farmer's market, first in glass. Glass was too expensive, so... Here in Colorado, there's the microbrewing industry, so I was able to find a place to can it, and then they were like, "Yo, do you want bubbles in your stuff?" And I was like, "Yeah, let's put some bubbles in tamarindo, yeah, a little bit, yeah, absolutely, man." Entonces,
it's perfect. You know what? Look, when I saw you start advertising the beverage, you know, Jamaica, and you had a couple of other ones I remember also, and I was like, man, I wish I lived in Boulder, because I know you were just selling it locally. And I was like, just for that. I would. Anyway, so, you know, months later, I take a trip with my kids. My daughter was looking at colleges. We're in Boulder. We're eating a sandwich at a sandwich shop. And I see your drink right there. And I went, I want to take all the ones you have right here. I got to take those. So I buy them. I drink them with my sandwich. The people behind the counter are like, oh, you got to try that drink. It's so good. It's so good. I try the beverage. What I love about it, what I love, man, and I have to just say this honestly, what I love is that it has the flavor of Jamaica, if that's the one you have. It has the flavor, the very natural, distinct flavor of that, of that herb or the jamaica, and then of the, what is it, like a hibiscus,
it's
right?
A flower. It's a flower. Yeah.
So the flower, it has that very distinct flavor, but also it's very subtle, like very subtly sweet, just enough sweet.
Solo and then toque, man.
Like
yeah.
a little tiny bit of that like fizzle, just a little bit, but not a lot. But it, so it feels very natural and refreshing to the palate the moment you drink it. And that's all of them, because I've tried all of them of flavor since then.
Dude, tamarindo, maracuyá, mango, guayaba, piña. And I have so many more right here, bro. Like that I have the next six flavors already in my mind. I have the next line after that.
Nice, you're on a roll. Like,
oh yeah. Oh man. And it's all about making them. They only have three ingredients. That's a new, based on like, you know, hot sauces. Like you have to have a formula. You know what I mean? It, usually, simple ingredients is the best way to go. Yeah. But And with the frescos, Meno, o sea, the Latino community is because the largest minority in the country by 2045, you know, minorities are going to be the majority in this country, man. You know, it's Latin American food and culture are part of the fabric of this country. You know what I mean? No matter how small or how remote it seems, like every single town in the U.S. has at least one Mexican restaurant, if not dozens, right? You know what I mean? We are, do you know that tortillas sold for the last 10 years have sold more than hot dog buns and hamburger buns in the US?
I didn't know that, but I believe it. I think I bought them all.
Absolutely. No, carnal. So it's like, of course, man, it's like poco a poco, yeah, we're starting to you know, our cultural assets and traditions, you know, are taking over more of the mainstream space, and that was definitely the idea.
And you know what I love about your product, and I'll just say this because we gotta wrap up here, Hermano. But what I really love about your product and the way you do the way you operate and your projects and your life is that it always starts at home with you. You know, like the salsa that started with your son, the flavors that reminded you of your mom in Guatemala, your family. You know, it starts there, and you spring forward from home, from that original idea. I love that, man. Keep it going.
Yeah, you know, that is what keeps me going, man, is that I couldn't have a more genuine connection to what I'm doing. Like, whether it was teaching, you know, like I didn't know, man, but when I first started teaching, but I really found, I've never felt more useful as a human being than as a teacher.